people. It is Starship Rokan Show with Anna DeBlancis. Offer another day of broadcast insolence.
Highest voter turnout for a midterm in 32 years, turns out.
And when 7 out of 10 people said they wanted to send the president a message, I said this yesterday, mm-hmm. we're not sure what message they want to send. Everybody was like, oh, this is going to be really bad for Donald Trump. I'm like, I don't think it's always going to. I think some people wanted to send their support, and the red got redder, as we said this at the end of the show yesterday, mm-hmm. as we were watching some of the initial results coming in from Indiana. The red got redder, the blue got bluer.
No question. Something you won't hear on this program all the time. We want to thank millennials for showing up. Nearly 30% of all voters in Chicago are between the ages of 18 and 34. How about that?
Wait, can you say that again?
Well, we're not going to say that again. Ever again.
Millennials?
You're thanking millennials for the first time in the history
November
of this program.
7th.
Now, that can turn once you don't like the outcome of millennials voting.
Right.
Right.
Who did you vote for, you idiots?
Yeah.
You ruined everything.
When Bernie Sanders becomes...
yeah.
King. The or a Kardashian, which is possible. Maybe more
Kanye.
Of a Mara Jenner, maybe
Kanye
a Jenner
for something.
Yeah,
in Chicago,
Amara Enya. Do I have that right?
Yes,
I have to practice that.
The mayoral candidate, backed by both Chance and Kanye.
Mm-hmm. So what we have here is a complete, and also as predicted on this program yesterday, no matter what the outcome is, all hell's going to break loose tomorrow. And it did.
It totally did.
The president, 1 hour and 30 minutes, he stood and took questions in the White House with all that gold and yellow stuff around him in the background, you know, from one of those big ceremonial kind of rooms. And he was on a tear telling people to sit down, hand the microphone over. I'm not going to answer that question. You're a racist. No, you're a racist. It was not unplugged, unhinged. It really was. And then, you know, Jim
You're
Acosta.
Rude. Fake news.
Right. And quite honestly, I don't think Jim Acosta is that. I don't want Jim Acosta to be representing the media constituency as he's up there screaming at the president.
No, there's a bit of showboating going on there for sure. Because, you know, he did call him fourth or fifth or whatever. He did off, you know, Jim one of the first questions of that press conference.
Because he wanted to fight with him.
Yeah, I think they probably both do enjoy fighting with each other. I don't enjoy watching it. I think the whole thing just breaks
degrades
down.
Degrades
yes,
the presidency
degrades.
Of the United States of America. And I think it also degrades the brand of CNN to some degree. The other piece of this, too, I like when the president calls on a guy, where are you from? And the guy goes, I am from MTV Lebanon.
And he said, where?
And he goes, where? What?
He said, oh, good. He likes Lebanon.
Right. And then they asked him, what are you going to do about Erdogan? And he had no idea what he was talking about.
I don't think he could understand the accent. And that wasn't the only time during that 90-minute press conference where he had difficulty with the accents. At one point, he just sort of stopped listening and said, okay, I don't understand, but let me just say one thing.
It was the one with the guy from Japan. Here you go.
Mr. President, can you just how you focus on the economic...
Where are you from, please?
Japan.
Okay. Say
Abe.
Hello. Say hello to Shinzo.
Okay.
Yes. I'm sure he's happy about tariffs on his cars. Go ahead.
That's my question, actually. So how you focus on the trade and economic issue with Japan, would you ask Japan to do more, or would you change your tone?
I really don't understand you.
How would you focus on trade and economic issues?
Trade with Japan?
Yes.
Well, we're dealing with Japan right now on trade.
That took a while.
And I might just tell you something.
Say hello to Shinzo.
That was like a children's book compared to what was going on. Right?
Yeah,
that was real calm. That mm-hmm. was like that was a moment. Do we have
that any, almost made sense?
Do we have an unhinged moment that we can play? Let's just play this, and then we'll get to bed and all the rest of the stuff we got to do here. But this is where it gets, you know. And first of all, let's be honest. That whole "say hello to Shinzo for me" is almost
humble brag.
Well, you can either go humble brag or you can go Sopranos on that.
Yeah.
Tell Shinzo Dan says hello.
He'll know what it means.
Right. Why do you mean hello? The guy also was having a little trouble with consonants. And that was. And listen, I had trouble. I'm not going to blame the president for that. I wasn't quite sure where he was going with that.
Japanese is a hard language to go back and forth with.
All right, here we go. This is a little bit of the Acosta moment.
Mr. President, I had one other question, if I may ask, on the Russia investigation. Are you concerned that... that you may have
I'm not concerned about anything with the Russian investigation because it's a hoax. That's enough. Put down the mic.
Mr. President, are you worried about indictments coming down in this investigation? Mr. President.
I'll tell you what, CNN should be ashamed of itself having you working for them. You are a rude, terrible person. You shouldn't be working for CNN.
And then the media relations person was like in a tug of war with the microphone.
That's the part that I felt badly for. The poor aide or intern or staffer who was like, hey, he's telling me to take the microphone away.
And he was like, excuse me, I'm not done yet.
And they were standing so close. They were just feet apart from each other because Acosta was right in front of the podium.
You're a rude, horrible person.
And then wait. That's the president of the United States.
For asking a question.
And then the next guy defended him.
All he did was ask a question.
And then he attacked that guy for defending
him. He's a horrible person for asking a question. How dare you ask questions? How dare you?
I think that's unfair.
You're a very rude person. The way you treat Sarah Huckabee is horrible. And the way you treat other people are horrible. You shouldn't treat people that way. Go ahead.
In Jim's defense, I've traveled with him and watched him. He's a diligent reporter who busts his butt.
Well, I'm not a big fan of yours either. So,
what is happening?
You repeatedly
You are the best.
Mr. President, you repeatedly, over the course
of... Okay, just sit down, please. Well, when you report fake news, when you report fake news, which CNN does a lot, you are the enemy of the people.
Wow.
Because Acosta was still talking to him while Peter had the mic.
But the problem is, I'm sure there's people listening right now going, well, yeah, that's right. The CNN reports fake news. The question then has to be of the White House, because he's the one asserting that. Well, tell me what the fake news is. What did we do that was wrong? Not we, they. That, you know, what was fake? What was made up just for the intent to misdirect?
I think it's hard to get beyond those two personalities. There's such an adversarial relationship between Jim Acosta and Trump, and both of them will go lower than others, I think, especially the president. But it feels as if those two, Jim Acosta is not fulfilling a watchdog role there. It's an adversarial role for sure. And every time this happens,
it was a fair
all the
question,
time.
Though.
Yeah, it was. It was. But I think wasn't he trying to go on to the next question? And that's when the president said, we're done with your questions.
Right. We're done with you. We're not done with Ben Bradley, though. He's going to be joining us here in just a moment from the WGN-TV newsroom. His thoughts on all of this. Lester Holt will have his thoughts on it coming up after 4 o'clock. Stan Bowman in between that, talking about the decision to fire Joel Quenneville from the Chicago Blackhawks. All of that coming your way. But first, Judy, what's happening at the bottom of the hour?
Jeff Sessions is out a day after the Democrats take control of the House.
Then there's this. Be sure to check out the CB app or hit up Facebook and tell Chicago's Best TV where you like to eat. Watch Chicago's Best Sundays at 10 p.m. on WGN-TV. Your pick just might be Chicago's Best.
Okay. There we go. Ed Bradley. WGN-TV News, Ben.
Top of the afternoon to you guys.
I don't want any more questions from you, Ben.
That's enough.
You're
next.
A horrible
turn the microphone
person.
Over.
Oh, boy. Here, wait.
Hand it to someone else.
Joe Donlin, take the microphone from me, Joe.
Joe. Joe.
What is the verdict on that? I know you guys were talking about it a little bit. Mr. Acosta, who you spent some time here in Chicago,
he did.
He's been a little aggressive. Yeah.
I just think it turns so adversarial between them. Yeah. I agree with a very aggressive watchdog role from the media on politicians of power, especially those who perceive to abuse that power. I just think sometimes it just gets personal with those two.
Yeah.
It, very personal, and it doesn't help.
On both sides.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the president takes everything personally, but that's a natural state of being for him.
I think that's true.
And that's how he's lived his life, is anybody who agrees with him, anybody who disagrees with him, anybody who makes him feel bad or makes him either feel insecure, he just lashes out at. And that's just what it is.
Yeah.
And that's what happens when you're making $2 million a year when you're 8. That's exactly the thing that happens. But Jim Acosta and CNN needs... The problem is that they're in a box here, right? They can't remove him from that assignment because the president doesn't like him. But what they can do is they can tell him to change, you know, to be very specific about asking questions only and not reacting to the... when the president's trying to provoke him into something.
Oh, I think CNN, though, benefits to a degree from all the free publicity surrounding every time the president calls them out or calls out one of their reporters.
You know, I don't know that they do. I don't know that they do. And I mean, I would like to think that you know, there's something about this that would be beneficial to them. I don't think there actually is.
Yeah. Speaking of beneficial.
Yes.
Guess how much J.B. Pritzker and Bruce Rauner spent per vote in this race, the most expensive gubernatorial race in the country.
I saw that.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
That's $72 per vote for Pritzker, $46 per vote for Rauner?
Sure,
would
we
you
wait
just
for it
taken
in the
cash?
Yeah,
yeah.
I know. Could you get that choice, maybe? That'd be, who would have chosen the cash?
Yeah. And then we've got this state house race up in the northwest suburbs, Mundelein, Gurnee, Wakanda. It, the two candidates separated by just one vote, which is pretty wild to think about.
Yeah.
In a race, each candidate gets about 25,105 votes for the Democrat, 25,106 votes right now for the Republican. Helene Miller-Walsh, who is the wife of former Congressman Joe Walsh up there. And speaking of doing some voting tabulations,
yes.
And I know this has gotten a little bit of coverage, but it just blows my mind. The Nazi running against Dan Lipinski.
Yes.
In the southwest suburbs.
Yes.
56,350 people voted for a guy who denies the Holocaust and essentially admits he's a Nazi.
How about that?
Oh, gosh.
Is that an uninformed electorate, or is that people who just vote, you know, Republican? And the Republicans, you know, wanted to distance themselves from this guy. They did everything they could after they realized that he had found his way onto the ballot.
It's a third, a third, a third. I think people just didn't quite know. People, and concentric rings here of people who didn't know and people who just want to vote Republican who may not have known. And then I'm going to say at least 10,000 of them were like, Nazi, great!
What about the independent who was trying, the conservative who was trying to, was it a write-in campaign he was running in
that
to try to say, hey, you have another choice?
I didn't see how many votes he got in the end.
I wonder.
But, you know, boy, those write-ins, that's such an uphill battle, isn't it?
So true.
Yeah. My son actually wrote his name in. My 10-year-old son wrote his name in for governor.
Everybody here did somebody for Tony Preckwinkle. It was our own little pimp that we did to Tony Preckwinkle's nomination, which is everybody wrote in their favorite, like, Star Wars character or
yes, radio personality,
football player.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of Preckwinkle, Capital Facts had a kind of an interesting take on the numbers as it relates to how things could play out in the Chicago mayoral election in February. They pointed out that Comptroller Susana Mendoza in her race for comptroller got 696,000 votes in the city. And Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle, who was running opposed for board president,
got
22,000 fewer votes than Mendoza. Mm-hmm. You know who got more than either of them?
Who?
Willie Wilson.
He wasn't on the ballot.
Sheriff Tom Dart, who, you know, has been talked about for years running for mayor. He's said he doesn't want to run this go-round, but it is kind of interesting. It gives us kind of an early gauge of people's
preference. You might want to think about
all these people on
the
ballot.
You might want to think about it. I don't know.
You got about a couple of weeks, and we have now 110 days, I believe, until the Chicago mayoral
election.
Oh,
God,
I thought you were going to say 110 candidates.
Yeah.
Because I was like, is it that high now?
It's the 110 days of Christmas is what that is. I don't want to think about another election. Can you give me, like, until Friday to think about it? I don't want to think
Monday.
About it.
You know, everyone, there's like an election hangover in newsrooms all over the country. And then, of course, the attorney general gets fired an hour till news time.
Oh, I know.
Well,
like, come on, man. We just want to eat the cold pizza that was left over.
I want to promise you something.
And put cartoons on.
I'm going to promise you something. Within the hour, someone else gets fired over there or leaves, announced they're leaving.
I just need it to be quiet till 5 o'clock, buddy.
Yeah, I would say before 5:30, 6 o'clock Eastern. Okay. You can give myself 90 minutes. That's what I'm gonna do.
That's all you need.
Bro, I'm having trouble seeing you in the camera. There, are you wearing the J.B. Pritzker vest, the sleeveless vest that he has made?
No,
so
I'm wearing a sweater. I'm wearing a nice.
Does he have a sleeveless
nice zip
vest?
Up sweater?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like Romney,
sweater, the campaign vest.
It's like Tom Dart with a
Mount Carmel fleece.
Yes, Mount Carmel fleece. It's got always got something on it.
I think I heard he celebrates his re-election every year by actually laundering the Mount Carmel fleece. So. That'll be good for another 4 years.
Yeah. I sort of see him sitting in his basement in a Lazy Boy, you know, reading some historical novel, and then with the thing out in the background, staring it between his toes, and trying to get the dog not to get in his lap. That's how I see him celebrating every election. Not at some fancy ballroom.
No.
That's what I see there. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Ben.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Ben.
All right, let's do this. Let us find out from Judy what's actually in the news in 2 minutes. It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeWantis right here, 720 WGN.
Yes.
All right, here's one of the men of the hour on the Super Celebrity Hotline, Mr. Stan Bowman, the general manager of our beloved Chicago Blackhawks. And
yes,
a tough day yesterday. I think we can all acknowledge, admit that it was very tough. Generally, when a head coach, Stan, gets fired, the fan base is like, they're kind of like, okay, I get it, and I understand. There's a certain amount of fatigue that sets in sometimes with organizations and head coaches. That was not the case here. And I'm imagining that you've had a lot of people reaching out to the team, and they're like, well, what's really going on here? So what is really going on here?
Yeah, you're right, Ro. I think as far as the reaction, you know, Joel's a beloved guy in Chicago, and rightfully so. He not only were his accomplishments, significant with our team, but he's a very likable guy, and I think people connected with his personality, and there's no question that that was part of why the reaction was the way it was, and I certainly understand that, and I think from my perspective, it was a very difficult decision to make that, but moving forward, we're trying to do what's best for our team so that we can, you know, head the right direction and get to where we need to get to as an organization, and sometimes it's time for a change.
Rocky Wirtz said the only way you overcome the criticism, and there's been a fair amount because people loved Coach Q and the things he was just said, is by winning. That's the way you overcome it. So this is a very different approach, Stan. Describe for us how this team will react differently to this coach and what we can expect.
Well, Jeremy's much different than Joel as far as his style, and I think we're looking for, you know, different things from our team in the results, but also, you know, the approach to the teaching is going to be different. So you're looking for a response from our players, and certainly some of these players have played for Jeremy before. We have more than just a couple. You know, he was with our group in Rockford last year, and we've promoted a number of those players to the NHL over the past year. So those guys have an experience of what it's like to play for Jeremy, and there's still a number of veteran guys who this is new. But we're looking for them to raise their game, and I think sometimes a different coach can do that. He can use them differently, or he can accentuate things that maybe they hadn't looked at a certain way, and that's the kind of things that we're looking for from Jeremy as we start tomorrow night.
Stan, how much different do you think your relationship will be with the coach, Jeremy, compared to what it was with Joel when it comes to day-to-day decisions or even game-to-game decisions? Do you think you have a larger say in this now?
Well, our relationship will be different because Joel and Jeremy are different, but you know, Joel and I were together for a long time, so I think we had a pretty good rhythm on how that worked as well. So I think it will be different for certain, and I think Jeremy's a different coaching method. You know, I think he's seeking a lot of inputs, and I think he's a guy that likes to pull from a lot of different areas. He asks a lot of questions, and he draws information out of you. So I'm certainly willing to collaborate with him in those instances. But at the end of the day, Jeremy's going to do what he feels is best. He's a pretty confident guy in that sense. Like he's interested in what other people have to say. But I think he said it well yesterday in his press conference. He's got to be himself, and I want him to be himself. That's why we brought him here. We value his approach to the game, and we don't want him to just be listening to other people. He's got to kind of assimilate this information and then go forward with what he thinks is best. And it's worked very well for him over the past few seasons as a head coach, first in Sweden, last year in Rockford, had a very good impact on our team. And I think having a chance to work with him last year, I got to see firsthand how he can positively change a group and get them going in the right direction.
Address the issues that you see developing here with a young coach, not well known by a veteran team that is littered with Hall of Famers. I mean, that's a big test for him, isn't it?
Well, there's one thing, though, that sort of goes through everything, and that is the passion and desire for these guys to win. And I know the veterans better than anybody. I've been with them for many years. I know what motivates them, and they are focused on getting back to the Stanley Cup. And Jeremy wants to win as well. And I think these guys are going to be open-minded. I know them. They're not the kind of guys that only respond to one type of coach. They've played for many coaches over their careers prior to getting to the Blackhawks. So that's just part of being an athlete. And I think as long as they feel that the coach is trying to help them win, I don't see that being an obstacle at all.
And on the departure, and so the other side of that coin, the departure of Coach Q, I mean, he was certainly respected. And a lot of these guys had very close relationships with him. Others didn't, you know, it was a much more of a, you know, a coach-player kind of relationship. But, I mean, was talk a little bit about, you know, the mood around the place yesterday.
Oh, of course, on a day like yesterday, the fact that your coach, who you've been with for a long time, isn't around is going to impact you. And I think we saw that. And that's understandable. These guys spent many, many days, weeks, months together with Joel. So I think you got to give that some time and not let them process it the way they want to. There's really no right or wrong way to do it. Each individual is a little bit different. Some guys handle it one way and other guys will another. I think, you know, we have to get going and playing some games. And then once you do that, then you start to get back to normalcy, which is, these guys are hockey players. They practice and they play games. And, you know, we've had two practices now. And I think once we get to tomorrow, we'll have a skate in the morning and then we'll play the game tomorrow night. And then we go on a road trip. And then, you know, the process moves on as far as a regular rhythm. So it's different for different players, but I think you can't try to make somebody react in a certain way. You have to let them handle it the way it works for them.
What I was struck by is the several players interviewed, they felt lost, and obviously the connection they had with Coach Q, but a lot of them took responsibility and felt like it was on them. And I wonder if that's a motivating factor moving forward, what your view is of that, Stan.
Yeah, I think that's one sort of unique thing about hockey players that I've seen over the years is they tend to internalize whenever the coaches let go that, you know, they sort of feel that as a sort of reflection on maybe they could have or need to do a better job. So that's what makes these guys really special is that they're humble guys and they recognize that there's ways to be better themselves, and you know, you certainly hope that they do their best moving forward, and we need to get better from where we're at today, and part of that's going to be from the players stepping up their game, and hopefully we can all play a small role in our team getting back on track.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly you know, we're at a moment here. I mean, you and I have talked about this on the air the last couple of years about, you know, having to, you know, right this ship. It's tough. Championship windows are very, very tough to stay in, especially with the salary cap, what it is in the NHL. Very, very hard. But there, you know, there's a moment where when a big change like this, a major figure from that great championship run leaves the team. What can you say to the fans about what we can expect? Are more changes to be anticipated here, or is this the biggest blow for the next couple of months for us?
Well, I think we have to give everything a little bit of time to normalize here. You know, it's tough when you make change after change after change, and then you're trying to see, you know, which one has a chance to kind of take hold. So I'm not expecting a lot of changes from now on.
Oh, no.
We lost Stan.
I thought he wasn't anticipating changes.
And then he fell off the face of the earth.
No, that's the I used to do that trick, too. You hang up on yourself in the middle of a sentence when you're like you're talking to somebody, and you're like, I got to be done with this conversation.
I lost a signal here. I don't know.
I'm in a tunnel.
I'm driving. Sorry.
I really wanted to hear that,
I'm
too.
Driving in an elevator. Yeah, I would like to know the answer to that question. Mm-hmm. Can you have him submit that in writing to us? What the heck happened there? All right, let's find out for Judy what's happening at the bottom of the hour in the newsroom. Our top of the hour.
She's driving in a tunnel as well.
That screwed her up, too. Judy?
She's Judy. With Stan, apparently.
I'm sorry. Did you come to me?
Yes, I came to you.
I was in a very big trance? News.
She's in a Zen
Yeah, I was in a trance. Yeah. You know what? I was polishing my nails. The Chicago Police Department moving to fire a controversial police officer.
The new head coach of the Chicago Blackhawks, Jeremy Culleton, joins the Steve Cochran Show tomorrow morning at 8:40. Speaking of...
How about that?
Yeah. Be interesting to hear him.
We lost Stan Bowman in the middle. Is he okay? Did we hear back?
Let's hope he didn't, like, trip or something.
I believe we did reconnect.
And he's okay.
He's okay.
All right. All right. We love Stan.
You know who we're not sure is okay? Brandon Saad. Didn't he get hit in the face with a hockey puck today?
He did.
So he's at the dentist.
Straight to the dentist.
Hope they have good dental insurance for the Hawks players.
I'm sure they do. Better than any other sort of insurance they have.
I would hope so.
It's dental.
Hope he's okay.
That's what's best, right? That's what hockey players are best known for.
Their smiles.
Yes, exactly. Or
beautiful
they used
smiles.
To be. I mean, that's, well, Duncan Keith.
Right?
They were still picking his teeth up off the ice in 2010. That was a crazy thing that went on right there.
Somehow he looked more beautiful just because of what he had been through.
Yeah. Duncan Keith?
Well, he did. After he lost those teeth, it was just this beautiful moment, the way it happened and everything.
Well, he was a beautiful man.
Yeah, he is.
He's real beautiful. Like,
beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Like, is it wrong for one man to say another man is beautiful?
No, I think that's okay.
My teeth hurt.
You mean from me saying beautiful?
No.
Just don't do that breathy thing that makes you feel it on the back of your neck.
By the way, the president did that a couple times when he was getting all mad at people today.
Shh.
Jim Acosta. You're a horrible, horrible human. Honest to God.
I can feel the heat.
Don't you?
Yeah.
Smell.
Yeah.
Oh, and it feels warm, too, doesn't it?
Oh, man. The president was really on a bender. I mean, really on a bender. You know what? He did say it once, and I thought that was a great, one of the few moments of great self-awareness. He goes, listen, if I were a drunk, you imagine how crazy I'd be?
Did say that. Very truthful.
And that is totally true. All right. I'm going through. We did a...
How'd we do?
We did a little, on the show here,
mm-hmm.
a little guessy-poo. Of how, you know, what's going to happen in this
prognosticating
election.
Prognosticating for the evening.
Yeah. Hold on one second here. Cover me for just one
there
second.
There are a few races.
I thought we were making our votes, like who we collectively voted for.
Yeah, well, that's a good way to go about it, because I don't think you did so well, Kevin.
Right.
So
I thought it was also anonymous. So.
No. We put your names on the top of
it. Well, I didn't. But
there are a couple of races, though, that have not been decided yet, because they're too close to call. So I don't know how we're going to grade
this. So there were 20
this.
On there, but there were two that are too close to call. I'm not counting those.
Or maybe it doesn't matter.
Just
ultimately.
Not counting those.
Which ones were those? Because we just
McSally,
right?
No, nope. She in Arizona raced to be the first female senator of Arizona between both women.
And technically, we're not done with Stacey Abrams in Georgia, but I'm counting that one going the other way anyway. So I'm sorry.
What do you mean you're counting it?
Calculation?
How can you do that?
Calculate because I don't think they've announced. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he has claimed victory.
Yes. Right.
Okay, so that one's decided.
That one is over, right? She hasn't said it's
AP
over.
Has not called the race, though, but he's claiming.
I'm still counting that for Kemp right now for the purposes. We can always take that off the board. Let me just share with you the unhappy totals.
Oh, gosh. We didn't do so well.
Kevin Powell comes in dead last.
How many
10 wrong. 10
out of 20.
10 out of 20 total, but 10 out of 18 that we know of. Okay, that total could go higher.
It could get worse.
Right. You know what? I'm not sure who did the X's. I'm assuming this is Judy because I don't have a name on it. And everybody else's. So I'm going to assume this is Judy. Judy got 8 wrong.
Hey, wishful thinking.
8 wrong. That was, that's what that was. Violetta got, she got 8 wrong as well.
So we tied, okay.
Right. Anna got 9 wrong.
Oh, gee.
Oh, God.
I did terrible.
Well, you know, let me just say this. Oh, actually, you know what? You didn't fill in the Underwood-Hulkern race, so I don't know where that goes.
I don't think I would have called that. It was an upset, wasn't it?
All right. So then she joins Kevin, and then I, so far I only got 3 wrong, but I got everything else wrong about it.
No big deal.
Yeah, no, it's a big deal. It was, in fact, not a big deal. That music can mean only one thing.
Mm-hmm. One of our favorites.
Either Lester Holt or John Williams is on the line. I don't know which one. Let me guess here. Hold on. Let's see. Lester or John? Which one is it?
It's Lester.
All right. There we go.
Sorry.
Damn it.
Second choice.
First choice, Lester.
That's really true.
You're first.
Hey, Lester, there's nothing going on here. I don't know what you're going to do with your NBC Nightly News tonight at 5:30.
I'm telling you, it's like clockwork around here. We sit down for our editorial meeting in the afternoon, and we're laying out the program, and then someone will run in the room and go, XYZ just happened, and today it was Jeff Sessions is out, and the whole newscast got ripped up.
Yeah.
But, I think you're going to have one. I think just to mess with the network news is tonight, I think they're going to drop something right around 5:15 Chicago time. I think there's going to be another shoe to drop.
Wouldn't be the first time. I mean, the funny thing about this one, it's not surprising. I think we expected it after the election, but it didn't come during the president's news conference today, so we thought maybe it was a few days down the road. But then, it like so many things, it came out essentially in a tweet.
Yeah, and I mean, surprised, I guess, everyone, including Jeff Sessions, or is there feeling that there was a lot of advance warning there?
Well, I mean, I think he saw it coming. I mean, the president's been verbally beating up on him ever since, he chose to recuse himself from the Russia investigation. And he was asked during a news conference earlier today about Sessions, and he kind of left it kind of hanging out there as to whether he had any confidence in him. And, and that was cleared up very quickly.
I'm sorry, but the reality, and this just drives me crazy, this idea that I can't believe he recused himself. And he only told me he was going to recuse himself. Well, this goes to the amateur hour issue that was happening at that point in the campaign. Once Jeff Sessions had meetings with Russians, he had to recuse himself by law. And Donald Trump is not a lawyer. I get that. But nobody around him was able to tell him. And maybe they did, and he doesn't want to say it. But that's the reality is he had no choice in the matter unless Jeff Sessions wanted to go to jail. And Jeff Sessions ain't going to jail for no one else. Right.
So I was speaking to legal experts today, and they say it was a clear cut. It was a very easy call for him to recuse himself. So the question is, does the next attorney general is that the test? Then will you or will you not do this on the Russian investigation? Right now, it's in the hands of Matt Whitaker, who is the chief of staff for Sessions. But he has, as you've probably been talking about, he has publicly spoken out about aspects of the Russia investigation. So he's on the record as a critic.
Yeah, limiting the scope. He says he wrote something for CNN, actually, explaining how investigating Donald J. Trump's finances or his family business operations falls outside the bounds of what this special counsel was set up to do.
He's perfect for the job, then.
Much. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but that does it. But what we're also hearing, and I don't know if NBC News is reporting, but I know other news operations are reporting this, that they're there may already be sealed indictments that have been prepared by the Mueller team.
Well, I will say this, talking to people in the know, who would be very surprised if, Mueller didn't see this coming. He had to see it coming, and that he did not take some steps to, protect the integrity of his work. Now, whether that means they're sealed indictments, I don't know if that's we can go that far in saying it, but you have to believe someone, who works in the level he does and, clearly aware of what's happening in the world, knew that this was coming, and that it could have a negative implication on his work.
It's an interesting, this would make a great movie, because if they do have sealed indictments, the question is, when do they file them? And do they file them right after or right before, if Robert Mueller gets a phone call that the attorney general or the president or anybody's on the phone for him that he's not expecting, do they file it? Do they not? I mean, this is a kind of a down to the wire moment here in a lot of ways.
In the event of my death, open this envelope type deal.
That sort of a deal. Yeah, I mean, I could see that happening in the circumstances because it's just crazy town. Speaking of crazy town, did you happen to catch the press conference today?
Yes, I was in transit, but I caught enough of it to know what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah, that was really something. When it comes to these kinds of moments where the press is asking questions and is being told by the person who is being questioned, who is called the press conference and is at the podium and has the microphone, sit down, I'm not answering that question, hand the microphone over, you're done, I'm not getting that, you're the worst person ever, You know, I mean, that was a weird press conference for anybody under any circumstances, let alone the president of the United States.
You know, it was weird, but I think everybody in the press corps, everybody gets this as part of the theatrics. It's part of it. It's another thing that plays the base. So, you know, listen, we shrug it off. I think the bigger story of that news conference was how he threw under the bus Republican candidates who did not embrace him during the campaign, basically calling him out and mocking them by name, you know, that, hey, you didn't want me? Well, you paid the price and you lost. I thought that was probably the most fascinating thing. I mean, the beating up of the press is, that's part of the act. But going after Republican candidates, I think, was kind of an eye raiser.
Yeah.
It was.
You wonder now, there's still a couple of races out, right? We don't have an answer in the Arizona Senate race.
Yeah, I think that one got down so close. I think that may be a few days before they get that one figured out. I think I don't think we have an answer. I think Kemp, I think, has declared victory in Georgia, but I don't think we've called that one yet. I don't have that right in front of me.
I believe that what you're going to see there, Stacey Abrams is going
to
ask for a recount. And you also have an interesting situation, too, in the Florida Senate race, where technically there could be a runoff as a result of this, right? But
a runoff or a recount there? Let me.
I guess it's within
five
tenths of a point.
Yeah.
There you can by Constitution of Florida, you can ask for a runoff. Now, we'll have to just.
Nelson has called for a recount first. That's the latest.
And the thing is, you know, recounts rarely change the results. But on the other hand, you know, why not?
Right.
That's where I got my rap name, Hanging Chad.
That's
from the 2000.
See, you could be in a band, too. It's not just Lester that gets to be the broadcaster and the cool band.
The Lester and the
news. Your magnifying glass.
right. A gigantic magnifying glass hanging from a chain around my neck.
Perfect.
Hey, and the Tester race, too. John Tester in Montana. That one is very, very close, but I think they have called that for Tester.
I think that's been called for Tester, I believe. I don't have that data right in front of me. I believe that was called for him. But yeah, these are, you know, we knew a lot of these races, especially in the West, where they do a lot of mail-in ballots. I mean, it just slows the process down considerably because, you know, if they're postmarked by Election Day, and so they may still be, you know, looking at them for several days. Some of these races we won't get calls on for a while.
Yeah. All right.
And, so close.
Anything else that we should be worried about that's coming up on the NBC Nightly News?
Worried about?
Yes.
No, I think we're gonna spend a little time kind of laying out, you know, what it means to have a divided government. And, you know, the president spoke about that today. Nancy Pelosi spoke about it today. The president kind of threatening Democrats that if you want to start the investigations, and then I'll come back at you, and a declaration of war. But we'll see. I mean, you know, Republicans got a lot of power right now in the House, and they have to figure out how they want to use it. And Republicans today were warning about about spending too much time going after the president, and you know, if they want to get their legislative priorities, it's going to be interesting to watch.
That's pretty fascinating. The Wall Street had a good day today, and I think in part because Wall Street, at a moment like this, they got a lot of what they wanted in terms of tax reform and other deregs, and some of the deregs can be done without House or Senate approval. And now they got a divided government, so nothing really of great import is legislatively going to be done here in the next number of months. So
yeah, no legislative surprises. It's only events. I mean, like the Mueller investigation and things like that. But I think that's a good point.
Yep. All right, Lester, we'll see you tonight, 5:30 on Channel 5. Thanks very much, sir.
Thank you, Lester.
Take care. All right. Bye-bye.
NBC 5. They don't like it when I call Channel 5.
No.
It worked so hard to be NBC with the whole big peacock. Mm-hmm. All right, so what do we got going here with Judy at the bottom of the hour?
What voters think about pot, guns, and taxes.
Ah!
Be sure to check out the CB app or hit up Facebook. Tell Chicago's Best TV where you like to eat. Watch Chicago's Best Sundays at 10 p.m. on WGN-TV. Your pick just might be Chicago's Best.
So the president has, I think, a split decision night last night in the election. Obviously, growing the Senate is a help to him, but he does lose the House, which is more dangerous to him than getting a couple extra seats on the Senate side, which is good, you know, for his nominees and other kinds of housekeeping things. But having Nancy Pelosi running the House of Representatives and having every committee, including the House Select Committee on Intelligence, run by Democrats, that's going to change what happens in Washington. And then within hours of this happening, Jeff Sessions gets fired.
Right. Times are changing. And it seems what's getting set up, it's like, whose move is it next? You heard the Nancy Pelosi press conference today following the 90-minute one from the president, and it just seemed as if both are sort of, they're calling it a victory, and they're kind of explaining how powerful they now are, or telegraphing to each other how powerful, while at the same time, the president tweeted two different tweets today saying Nancy Pelosi deserves to be speaker, but then saying if they want to start investigating us, we can investigate them.
Renato Mariotti is with us, and let's just start with that before we get to Jeff Sessions. Do you think you're going to see a lot of investigations out of Capitol Hill, and what kind?
Oh, there's no question that there's going to be a lot of investigations out of Capitol Hill. First of all, Adam Schiff, who is now going to be the head of the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, has made clear that his feeling was that Devin Nunes, who has, I think, gained some notoriety for recusing himself from the Russia probe, but then nonetheless...
And then re-recusing himself, de-recusing himself.
Yeah, very bizarre, the most bizarre, quote, recusal, unquote, ever. But essentially, you know, he, according to Congressman Schiff, the Republicans didn't call a number of witnesses that the Democrats felt should be subpoenaed, so there's certainly going to be an investigation there. Democrats had talked about, you know, subpoenaing tax returns of Donald Trump. There had been talk before Kavanaugh is confirmed of investigating him. Now, as you alluded to, we have today's big news. Democrats are talking about an investigation there as well. So certainly there's going to be a lot of investigations, and that's why elections matter. Flipping the House is a very, very significant development for Democrats.
All right, let's talk about Jeff Sessions. Jeff Sessions fired today. He was, you know, the first guy, first elected official, right? Senator from Alabama, and a big-time guy. Guy was, you know, well-known on Capitol Hill and a big power player in Alabama politics. And he was the first guy to dip his toe into the Trump waters and, you know, get out there when every other legit Republican in 2016, in January and February of 2016, was trying to run away from Donald Trump. Jeff Sessions embraced him. How stupid was that?
Well, you know, I guess it depends on your perspective. It's interesting. Jeff Sessions became the Attorney General of the United States. I think it is safe to say that no matter who else was nominated and won the presidency, Jeff Sessions would never have been their Attorney General, may never have been in their cabinet of any other potential nominee. So he got something out of it, very tangible. He became Attorney General. But on the other hand, he was treated very poorly by Donald Trump. I don't think anybody, even whether you're a supporter of the president's or not, would disagree with the fact that Trump belittled Sessions, you know, attacked him publicly. There have been numerous reports from various sources indicating Trump flying out on rage at Attorney General Sessions, and he's largely upset about the fact that Sessions recused himself, which is something that he essentially was required to do, recusing himself from the Russia investigation. So, I think Sessions' entire career in many ways is defined by these couple years as Attorney General, I'll leave it to him as to whether that was a good thing or a bad thing.
I'm going to tell you right now, Jeff Sessions is a wily little guy. And I don't think he's going to... I think that his treatment here was, to his estimation, so unfair. I think that Donald Trump might have just peed in the wrong Fruit Loops.
Well, you know, there's no question that Sessions could cooperate with Mueller, could cooperate with other law enforcement. I think the real question is whether or not there will be a Mueller investigation for Sessions to cooperate with. This is...
Okay, we're tight on time, but I want to ask you this question very quickly.
Sure.
There is a rumor that there are sealed indictments ready to go. So is that Mueller protecting himself?
That could be. And the question, I mean, I generally don't discuss rumors, but I would just say that, you know, if that is the case, then that those are kind of what a fait accompli. It's already been done, and that would play out. It would be very hard for that to be undone by the new acting attorney general. But just so we catch everyone up here, the news today and what we're referring to here is, you know, the president requested Jeff Sessions' resignation. Jeff Sessions released a letter, or there was a release of a letter by Jeff Sessions in which he resigned, and he says, at your request. It's undated. It was unclear when that was submitted, but it happened. It took effect today. And then Trump, instead of appointing the deputy attorney general, Rod Rosenstein, who is the number two guy, he appointed the chief of staff to Jeff Sessions,
who's already on record not liking the breadth of the Mueller investigation,
right.
And says that the breadth of the Mueller investigation does not actually include looking into Donald Trump's private business. So that's an interesting insurance thing. All right, Renato, thank you very much, sir. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Renato.
Thank you.
All right, let's check now. Judy's got news. Come your way, too. That music can mean only one thing. It now signifies the entrance to this program of the most powerful Republican in the state of Illinois.
Can you imagine if all the prominent, high-ranking Republicans in Illinois got together, how many there would be in the room?
There'd be one, and it would be Congressman Adam Kinzinger from the 16th Congressional District. And now there are some other Republicans. Other Republicans did win last night in the state of Illinois. Not a lot of them.
Not a lot. Statewide, zero in terms of statewide offices.
Right. So that happened. But Adam is certainly one of the highest profile Republican congressmen from Illinois currently. And I would have made the argument the most high profile congressman from Illinois in a lot of respects.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's just you. So what are you going to do about that, Adam?
We got Republicans in Illinois, I promise.
All right, so what do you think happened?
I think, to be quite honest with you, just blatant, I think the governor did not have his heart in his reelection campaign. I think you can point back to a number of political mistakes that Bruce Rauner made. When first off, a very divisive primary, no real effort to bring people back. A budget impasse that, you know, while I think it was largely the fault of Mike Madigan, I don't think the governor communicated that well. I mean, if I had been governor during that, I would have been on your show and Chicago broadcast every day saying, hey, I'll put the tax increase on the table. Mike Madigan, what are you going to put on the table that's anathema to you, and let's get something done? And there wasn't great communication strategy. So I think it's some of that. I think in the suburbs, you know, I'm sad about the loss of my friends, Halkern and Roskam. I think some of that was a Trump backlash a little bit. It seems like the suburbs are going kind of anti-Trump at this moment, to be honest. And so I think it's kind of any number of things. I think nationally it was a push. You know, we made some gains in the Senate. We lost the House, but not by as bad as we could have. Statewide, though, it was very much not pretty, that's for sure.
Does it matter by how much you lose the House, though?
I think
would be different. You'd have to go, lobby that one person to come over, or two or three. But it's significant. It's going to be, dozens. And now the House, and now as a member of the House, I ask you this. How aggressive do you think House Democrats are going to be at looking into Donald Trump's business?
Yeah, so that's going to be the question. As a guy that's lived this, I mean, I was there when we took the majority in 2010, and we overreached in a lot of areas. You know, there was this kind of wave of we have to defund Obamacare, even though it's not actually defundable. And, you know, you had people like Ted Cruz calling for shutting down the government over it. And we put expectations for our base out. I say we generically. I think I was pretty honest about the difficulties of it the whole time. But, you know, you put this expectation for your base that you can do all these things that you can't, and then your base has a backlash, and they get ticked, and they get... So that's what the Democrats are going to have to deal with now, which is, okay, you know, there's people in our base that want to get Trump's tax returns. They want to, you know, shut down all this stuff Trump is doing. You can't do it because you don't have the Senate. And so what's going to be that question? Do they play? Look, I want to work with Democrats on some things. I do think there's areas for bipartisanship. Infrastructure is among one of them, actually fixing health care and kind of getting it out of this toxic, you know, left versus right thing. That's going to be up to them. It's going to be up to the president. And it'll be interesting. It could have been a way worse day for Republicans. That's why I think this matters to say. It was a push. It was a great day, frankly, in the Senate for us. Bad day in the House. And we'll see how this works out. It'll be, if the Democrats are smart, they're going to try to work with the president, even if, you know, he may not work with them. I don't know.
You heard Pelosi and the president speak today. It seems as if they're both were handing out somewhat of an olive branch while claiming victory, and then also saying, "Well, maybe maybe we work together, but you know what? If you try to do something to me," the president said, "Well, we got the Senate to go after you," and it immediately got ugly right away. I mean, I think if you look at the people who voted, they also said, "Hey, we don't necessarily love this state of fighting in Washington. We'd like to see some of that go away and real work get done." I didn't feel very good about that today, even when I heard both of them speak. I don't know how you reacted to that.
I didn't either. Look, I'm not trying to sound like the old guy in politics now. You know,
uh-oh, here it goes. I mean, back in my day of 2012 and 2013.
Nowadays, yeah, I'm starting to marry my ear. But I'll tell you, man, I've been through my this will be my fifth term. Every term starts with people. So whenever there's some kind of a change somewhere of, you know, committing to work together, and it takes 12 hours before it all falls apart. So I think, you know, there may be some areas, maybe we'll get an infrastructure bill early. But the thing to keep in mind, and I'm sorry to your listeners, is the presidential election starts today. And so there's going to be a lot of pressure not to give President Trump a win on anything. Look, we did the same to President Obama. I'm not saying this is anybody's one fault. But I hope we can. But it's really, this is where I think if you're a Democrat, you're going to have to do some soul searching, especially and say, look, you know, do we just try to win the next election? Do we try to get some victories? I can't answer that for them. All I can say is for me, as the northernmost Republican congressman in Illinois now, I'm going to work my tail off to try to get some bipartisan things done, and while being true to what I believe.
You know, and I've always appreciated that about you personally, that, you know, you've always kept your mind open to, I mean, this is a big and complicated and sophisticated state, Illinois. This is not, you know, politics is never simple here. And it is, you know, the state that elevated some of the most important political figures in American history,
true,
you know, launched them. And so whether it's, you know, well, the list goes on. With not enough time to go through them. But this is a moment in American politics that's unlike any other. And I think a lot of people were scared. I mean, there was people were voting out of fear. People were voting out of fear that Donald Trump is going to do something goofy, or and they needed to stop him. And then other people were voting out of fear that people were going to try to stop Donald Trump. And it wasn't. There was never a. We don't live in an environment. I blame the president for this mostly, but we do not live in an environment of hope. We live and I'm not talking like hopey changey. I don't even get into that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying in a moment of positive. Here's what we can do. Not here's what we better do, or we're all going to die. And is there a way to change that dynamic? And does this, the president obviously not taking this as a message, right? He's already said he's won and this was great and this is the best thing that ever happened to him. But is there any way to change that in America, do you think, Congressman?
Well, it's the toughest question. And I've thought about trying to put this in words on paper somehow of, you know, look, people have to also be conscious of what they're demanding of their politicians. I don't want to be cliche and say it, but representatives really reflect what it's going to take to get them elected. It was kind of intended that way. And so people need to, I think, demand of their representatives. It's okay to be partisan. That's natural. But don't govern out of fear. I've said this. Look, and I'll get to the broader thing in a second, but I don't necessarily enjoy this job. And I don't mean that to be, like, shocking. It's like, I mean to say, if I don't feel like I'm making a difference or doing something good, like, there's more fun things to do. And so looking at this and saying, you know, how do I bring hope to millions of people? Illinois is a pretty hard scrabble political state, you know, but I think people are still desperate for a positive message. I ran a positive radio ad that people were always calling me about, like, holy cow, it was nice to hear something refreshing. And so I think that, and I think on the broader level, it's going to take all of us. I can't look at it and say, I've got the prescription for fixing it. But what I can say is to all your listeners, demand different of your people. And, you know, give your leaders some flexibility when they may not be 100% exactly the partisan position you want, but they're trying to accomplish things and get some things done. And to every leader, I'd say, you know, be true to what you were elected for, but also understand that, you know, a lot of these issues we debate about and get our feathers up about, at the end of our lives, we're going to look back and say, it wouldn't have made really a hill of beans difference in our lives, and it wasn't worth losing as much sleep as we did or time with our grandkids or as broken of relationships as came simply because we had a different political view. And I think as a country, that's starting to turn the corner. It's not going to happen in the next 2 years because we're in a presidential election, but I think people are starting to get enough sick of it that it might change in the kind of medium term, I hope.
I hope you're right, too.
Because what I saw in that press conference today, oh, not gosh. Presidential. I'm sorry. There's yeah. no there's no two ways around it. His behavior was so beneath the dignity of the office of the presidency. You know, to get up and tell, you know, call out journalists and say that they are the enemy of the people, and to tell people to sit down and be quiet and all those sorts of things. It just, that is not what I want my president to do. Be damned. Policy. You want, I want my president to behave like an adult in the room and to comport himself with the decorum that is expected, that represents the people of the United States of America. Not just a bunch of angry people, but all the people of the United States of America.
Well, and I have no problem with the president calling out bias. There's bias. Okay, fine. But Republicans have pretty much, you know, we held the House the last 24 years, we've had the president for a long time with quote-unquote media bias, so we can cut through. And calling people the enemy of the people, I mean, ISIS is the enemy of America. You know, Vladimir Putin is the enemy of America. Biased journalism, you know, you may not like it. I don't like when there's biased journalists, but I don't think they're the enemy of America, for goodness sakes. Yeah. That's some pretty harsh language.
Yeah. Although Jim Acosta has been arrested, and he's been put in the same cell as Jeff Sessions. Hey, you know Jeff Sessions. Are you surprised by this?
No, I saw it coming, not necessarily this quickly, but I think the president has a right to have an attorney general he has faith in. But I'm hoping, I don't think this is, I hope it is not the beginning of, you know, something in the Mueller probe. Let that finish, for sure.
All right. Thank you, sir. Congressman Adam Kinzinger, congratulations.
Congrats.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you.
See you guys.
All right, there he goes, Congressman Adam Kinzinger. Now, he comports himself like like an appropriate decent human being. Is that so hard to ask?
No.
I mean, I don't always comport myself like that, but I'm not the president of the United States. I want the president of the United States. And then people go, well, he wouldn't be president if he acted like that. Well, doesn't that say something? I mean, if that's your best defense of it, it's not right. It's just not right. You need to have, I mean, and we baked all this into the cake. We don't want America to be like that. You don't want your kids to grow up to act like that. Maybe you want to be president of the United States. There's another way. You know, am I wrong about this? No. There were 44 other guys who made it not doing it like that.
Right. And I think you saw some of that in Illinois with voting, and that these suburban educated districts decided that enough, and they came out to vote for Democrats in areas where you really thought the incumbent would hang on to those two seats.
All right.
With Roskam and Holcomb.
Judy, what's happening in the newsroom?
Just to add to that, DuPage County, all Democratic congressmen now. Unheard of. Part one of our series, A Few Good Women.
Okay. I wasn't sure if that was the news or that was just
both the news.
An editorial aside. All right, here we go. Here is Violetta Pottermatic with the WGN Traffic. Okay, an odd way we're going to do the top five of five today, but it's
very
necessary.
Special.
It's necessary. We're going to have your 5, 4, 3, 2, and then we're going to take a break, and your number one is going to be a live top five at five as Anthony Scaramucci joins us to explain what in the hell we just saw.
Great.
I love the Booch. Mm-hmm. I really do.
like to hear his observations.
I would never
disappoint.
Like to hear him just explain a few things to us.
Please.
Yep, you got 5 minutes.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right. Checking in at
number five.
These are actually the top five. It's the four wackiest things that happened in that press conference today. And
oh,
then,
gosh, that's
and
hard.
Then Anthony Scaramucci explaining why all of this happened.
Great.
So the president wins Senate last night. I mean, they holds the Senate, I should
Picked
say.
Picked up a few seats.
And adds, right, mm-hmm. to the Republican majority. That's very good news for him. The bad news is, and I think it's significantly bad news, is that he loses the House, which could open up a whole raft of other problems for him. And doesn't lose the House in a little way, loses in kind of a big way. But he holds Florida. I mean, it was a mixed bag of things. There were things that were good, there were things that were bad. But the president, he did not get enough sleep last night. He got very testy, very testy at the White House. For an hour and 30 minutes, he took questions today. Hour and 30 minutes.
It's a long time.
Yes. And he said the reason that he lost anything, those people, those Republicans who lost, didn't let him win it for them.
I'm not sure that I should be happy or sad, but I feel just fine about it. Carlos Cubella, Mike Kaufman, too bad, Mike. Mia Love. I saw Mia Love. She'd call me all the time to help her with a hostage situation in Venezuela. But Mia Love gave me no love, and she lost. Too bad. Sorry about that, Mia. Peter Roskam didn't want the embrace. Those are some of the people that, you know, decided for their own reason not to embrace, whether it's me or what we stand for. But what we stand for meant a lot to most people.
I don't think most people, I'll be honest with you. No, because what we stood for would have meant a lot. Then Democrats wouldn't have won those races. Do you like that? Mia Love.
No love.
No love for Mia Love.
Roskam, no embrace.
Roskam. He did the thing. He did the breathing thing.
Oh, he did. Yeah. There's no question.
He did.
Number four.
He accused a reporter of asking him a racist question.
On the campaign trail, you called yourself a nationalist. Some people saw that as emboldening white nationalists. Now people are also saying
that
the
president. That's such a racist question.
There are some people that say that now the Republican Party is seen as supporting white nationalists because of your rhetoric. What do you make of that?
I don't believe it. I don't know. Why do I have my highest poll numbers ever with African Americans? Why do I have among the highest poll numbers with African Americans?
All right. Wait. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why do I have my highest poll numbers? That's such a racist question. Honestly, I mean, I know you have it written down and you're going to tell me. Let me tell you, it's a racist question.
And Mr. President,
I love
ask-
you know what the word is? I love our country. I do. You have nationalists. You have globalists. I also love the world. And I don't mind helping the world. But we have to straighten out our country first. We have a lot of problems.
And
excuse me. But to say that, what you said, is so insulting to me. It's a very terrible thing that you said.
Well, the problem is that the term nationalism is already well-defined in the culture. He wants to redefine it, right? But I think it's kind of like the N-word. If you say it.
Strong.
No, it is. If you say it, well, it is an N-word, actually. But if you say it, you have to be thoughtful about the context of how you're saying it. If he says, I'm a nationalist, you want to adopt an entire identity around that has a very, very negative connotation. And it's not trying to win it back and make it popular again. You don't want to make nationalism popular again. You could be a patriot. You could love your country. You could American, and you could wear a USA hat, do all those things, and represent the United States of America. But to say that you're about the nation first and the world be damned, which is what nationalism is really about, and generally about ethnic nationalism, That's the, at least the history of it for the last 100 years. You can't rewrite history. I'm sorry. I'm not buying. Checking in at
number three.
It gets better. Back in 2016, Lil Jon, who was on The Apprentice, confirmed a boardroom incident during a 2013 taping in which he says that Donald Trump referred to him as an Uncle Tom. Today, Yahoo News White House correspondent once again pressed the president about these comments, and this didn't go well either.
Michael Cohen recently said you called black voters stupid.
That's false.
Omarosa has accused you of using the N-word, and the rapper Little John has said you called him Uncle Tom. What's your response?
I don't know who Little John is.
He was on The Apprentice.
I don't know. Oh, he was? Okay. Yeah. Oh, I see.
Have you ever made racist remarks?
No, I would never do that, and I don't use racist remarks.
Okay.
I never use racist remarks. I've never used racist remarks. Okay.
Well, one point of fact.
Go ahead.
One point of fact. Because you told her you have the highest approval among African Americans. It's just 8%, sir. Single digits.
See, when you talk about division, it's people like this that cause division. Great division. No, point of fact is that I never used a racist remark. That's the point of fact. Who are you from?
I'm from Yahoo News.
Yahoo? Good. Good. I hope they're doing well.
What was that?
He did that thing. He should drag it out.
Don't know who Little John is, and then all the pictures of him with him and at The Apprentice. I guess he doesn't remember everybody.
Number two.
Yeah.
A day after his party lost the House but won the seats in the Senate, the president lashed out at members of the media who, I mean, we know all of this already. I just need to know what we're doing here. It's Jim Acosta. Oh.
Yep.
Oh, you
this
thought
was
that?
Good.
You thought that last one didn't go well? How about this?
Mr. President, I had one other question, if I may ask, on the Russia investigation. Are you concerned that you may have
I'm not concerned about anything with the Russian investigation because it's a hoax. That's enough. Put down the mic.
Mr. President, are you worried about indictments coming down in this investigation?
Mr. President.
I'll tell you what, CNN should be ashamed of itself having you working for them. You are a rude, terrible person. You shouldn't be working for CNN.
There you go.
That got ugly.
President United, and they had and a White House communication staffer had to pull the microphone away from it.
The young woman,
Jim Acosta.
And then she looked at the president like, "I can't get it. What should I do?" And then you got to wrestle it away. And she was like, "I'm going to try again." And then it didn't work. And then it was she kneeled down like, "I'll try to get it from below now. I'm going to pull it. I'll get it.
I got him. I got him, Mr. President. I'm going to tackle him now."
Still didn't work.
Oh my God! It's the White House. That's the White House. That's my house. That's your house.
Me love, no love.
No love.
Lil Jon, don't know him.
No. All right. Judy, headlines. Smoochie.
May I speak?
No, be quiet.
Take the microphone
away. Anthony Scaramucci is going to join us as a live number one next. Your turn.
Do I still hear it?
Your turn, honey.
A former Republican governor will help Illinois' new Democratic governor.
Then there's this, bringing the old Cook County Hospital back to life. An exclusive look, plus even bigger plans for the neighborhood. Tonight's cover story, WGN-TV News at 9 o'clock.
All right. We're going to do a live number one for the top five at five.
This
so that means
great.
That it's
number one.
And he is number one in all of our books. And as a matter of fact, speaking of number one books, Anthony Scaramucci has one.
Nice.
He does.
Congrats.
Congratulations, Mooch.
I appreciate that. Thank you. It was a monumental undertaking.
Trump?
A lot of people think I don't know how to read, let alone write, so I was very happy with the whole thing.
No, that is not true. You know how to. You also know how to wear a really good suit.
You do.
Trump, the Blue Collar President, is the name of the book. And I got to ask you, the premise of what you're approaching in the book, and sort of the premise of what you're out talking about right now as it pertains to the president, is that he, even though he, you know, grew up in very different circumstances than almost anybody else, you know, on earth, he understands the blue collar mind. He understands the working class mind of America. The people who feel like they've lost their authorship in their own lives in America, and that it's been overtaken by all these other constituencies or technology or other things that have kind of taken them out of the play here, and that he gets it better than anybody else gets it better than the media and everybody else. But I will ask you this. Today, the press conference. Did you see the press conference?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Just your thoughts. I want to leave. Just you tell me what you thought of that.
All right, well, you know, I'm going to get in trouble for this because, you know, I mean, I would have given the, after the 3 weeks that the president had, I would have probably given him a day off and deplugged a little bit, you know. So, listen, that's him. And so they were trying to recreate the same experience that took place at the UN, which I thought was very, very good. But I think that the problem is that you're putting him there. The press is very antagonistic. The president doesn't like it. He thinks it's disrespectful of them to talk to him the way that they're talking to him. And so when they start that invective towards each other, it's not the best look. And so for me, I'd rather have the president in a better mood, more upbeat. He clearly won a lot of things last night. There were a few things that he lost. I called the experience, you know, a Forrest Gump post-election day analysis, right? It's like a box of chocolates. There's a piece right. in there for everybody. The Democrats right. want some stuff. He wants some stuff. But what people I haven't heard talking about, the critical thing that he won was the DeSantis situation, because he needs that state in 2020, and he picked up a red senator and a red governor. And so keeping that apparatus together for him in 2020 is going to be huge.
In Florida.
So, no, I wasn't in love with the press conference. I thought he needed a day off. And, you know, you can't pitch 46 straight innings and then, you know, pitch a 47th inning when you're that tired.
He
you
did
know,
seem tired,
opinion.
And he seemed testy, and yeah. it was, yeah, that was not a good combination because yeah,
I mean,
he just
I mean, you know,
clashed.
You know what I like about you guys? I'm telling you the truth. You already know that. But if you put a politician on your show, they would spin it and tell you, oh, that was great, and let me tell you 14 reasons why it was great. I think people are tired of that nonsense, too. You know, they would rather just tell you the truth.
Anthony, what do you make of the Sessions news? You heard that Chief of Staff John Kelly delivered the news to him, and I know that you were in a similar situation with that, but the whole thing, how does it all add up in your book?
Well, I mean, listen, I mean, a little different. I mean, he flat out fired me and sort of said, you know, you're going to clean your desk out by noon. I think in Sessions' case, they let him resign. I mean, I saw a copy of the letter. I didn't release anything like that. You know what I mean? There was no letter for me. So I think that was a little bit easier. I think it was predictable. I applaud the president and his staff for making that decision. Like immediately making that decision, I think that was very important because you don't want to let that stuff go too long. Do you understand what I'm saying? I mean, yeah, you know, like, you know, it's the day after. That's very presidential / corporate CEO like. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, he has been talking about this forever. To do it the day after, I kind of read it as, you know, he wants to change the story a little bit because everybody's been talking about this. Now then the big question is, how does this impact Mueller? If you were still advising a communication strategy here, and I know, you know, you and some others do it sort of externally. I know that I think he still respects your opinion on a lot of things. Do you?
I talked to him. You know, I mean, he's also the media coach in chief. You know, he was calling me after my Bill Maher presentation, and he was critiquing it. You know, so we're having a good laugh about that. But, you know, he's not going to listen to me. He's not going to listen to those guys either. But if I were going to offer him some advice, it would be the same advice I've been consistent on. And I don't know if you caught a Sinclair interview. I would tone it down a notch. You're winning on so many fronts. The economy is doing
now,
so
he
well.
Said that. Now, he said that in the Sinclair interview. And you, is that something you told him? You suggested he say?
Well, I've been suggesting that for 6 months. I actually suggested it on the first day that I was in the job. When I came back from the press room after the press conference, we had a conversation about it, and he turned to me and said, you know, I had such a great relationship with the media, you know, for 45 years. What do you think happened? I was like, well, you can't let Steve Bannon declare war on the media. I mean, now you're at war with these guys. We got to de-escalate.
Well, I mean, but so also it's different covering a celebrity than covering a president, too. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. you're going to get treated differently.
No question. And so that doesn't fit his style well because he's a combative guy. You don't want to turn everyone in the press room into Rosie O'Donnell, right?
Right.
Hey, so what you want to do is you want to tone it down a little bit.
Anthony Scaramucci, let me ask you very quickly. How bad do you think the House going to the Democrats is going to be for this administration?
And how will he react? Because you know him.
Well, I'm hoping, because he's like a human Swiss Army knife without a corkscrew. He doesn't drink, so you take the corkscrew out of there. I'm hoping he flips the knife out and he pulls out one of the utility knives and cuts a deal with these guys on infrastructure. If he does that, he can declare bipartisan victory. I do think he's got the Chinese thing locked up. He'll make that announcement shortly, like in the next 6 to 8 weeks. And so the combination of those things plus the denuclearization of North Korea, he's got a pretty good narrative to run on 2020. So I'm hoping that's the case. If they pull the impeachment stunt on him and the subpoena power stunt on him, you know, we're going to be in for a long 2 years.
Yeah. All right. Always a pleasure talking to you, man. Thank you so much for being with us.
As
always.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Anthony Scaramucci, the new book.
Love your city.
Love you. The new book is called Trump, the Blue Collar President.
Love you more.
No, love you more. He's a good guy. I mean, a lot of things happened there.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of good guys around the president. And I think there are moments where the president, you know, I might even enjoy playing golf with the president as long as I'm on his team because he cheats. And then I would benefit from that. But this behavior of act like a president of the United States. All right. That's all I'm asking for. Is it too much to ask? Apparently it is. Judy Pilak is asking for her time in the sun in 2 minutes. Okay, that music is the theme to the circus on Showtime, the best political half hour in television, maybe in television history.
Just hearing it makes me want to see another episode. You know how the music can do that?
Yeah. Screw Meet the Press or State of the Nation or whatever. This is the best half hour. The one on CBS is half an hour. What is that one called?
Face the Nation?
Face the Nation, yes. All right, Mark McKinnon joins us. He's one of the executives and hosts of that show. And am I right in assuming that today's press conference in the aftermath of the election might change the narrative for what you've already been working on all week?
Oh, man, I just got off a conference call. We're redoing the whole show. I mean, we thought it was going to be we thought it was going to be about the midterms.
Oh, that's nice.
When there was a wrestling match, I pray to God your cameras caught this. When there's a wrestling match between Jim Acosta and a White House staffer, whether she's trying to pull the microphone away from him, I literally thought that punches were going to get thrown.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the room and we had our cameras there. It was incredible.
How did you read that being in the room? I felt sorry for her. I didn't really feel sorry for the other two, Acosta or the president, because it seems like they just get in each other's face as a matter of course. But What did you feel when you watched that?
Oh, I mean, the whole thing was just so untethered, and it's so interesting too because the press conference itself was almost an hour and a half, and Trump is just fearless, and just in the sense that most presidents when they walk into a situation like that, if they took questions, they'd have a list of names of like the people that they'd call out. Well, Trump was just like roaming around the room. He was calling on people left and right. And I guarantee you that at least half the time, he had no idea who he was calling on. So it could have been anybody from any crazy outlet. And there's some pretty crazy ones in there. But then he'll call on somebody like Acosta, who he knows is going to get in his face. And he knows there's going to be a confrontation. And so you know that he does it on purpose. So you had it was quite a confrontation, too, if you saw it.
Mm-hmm.
It's 99% theater. Trump knew that they were going to get in a fight, and they did. And like you said, the poor aide got in the middle of it trying to rush the microphone away.
She was trying to grab it. She looked at the president like, I can't get it. She moved around, she wasn't getting it.
It was wild. And then, of course, he was asked about whether or not he'd fire Sessions, and that he said, I'll think about that and get back to you, and then 1 hour later, boom.
Yeah.
Boom.
One of the few times our predictions missed, I expected there was going to be another major one to drop today. There will definitely be another major one to drop tomorrow, and you'll have to rewrite the whole damn show again, because this is, he wants to, he's going to want to take care of all the family business right here in this week, don't you think?
Well, the interesting thing about the timing on this is that Donald Trump Jr. himself is saying to friends that he thinks he's going to be indicted within a matter of days.
Hmm.
Do you think that there are a sealed, and I mean, none of us know for sure, but is your instinct that there are sealed indictments waiting to go?
Yeah, I think Mueller's locked and loaded and ready to go.
And the sealed indictments are being held right now because he also knows that since the attorney general has just been fired and the guy who's been tasked to replace him, the former chief of staff, has already written memos on the fact that, that there is a limit to what the Mueller investigation can look into. And that limit means that they can't look into the personal finances of the Trump organization or Donald Trump personally.
And he can also limit the budget and authority of the special counsel's office.
Exactly right. And so it's pretty clear now that this has all been a series of moves. You know, so when that guy was hired a year ago, it was pretty clear what his background and perspective was on all of this. It's you can read about it. There's a bunch of stuff on the record and stuff he's written about where his sort of allegiance is and what his view of the law is and the investigation. So it's really, it's just astonishing, really, the whole thing. Somebody should do a TV show.
Thank God.
I can't imagine when you took on this project initially, and I know we've kind of talked about this for the last couple of years, but mm-hmm. you know how it began is one thing and then turned into other things, and I don't think anybody had any anticipation it was going to be this much of a circus. The idea was to try to make what can sometimes be boring into a circus, and now it's the exact opposite. You're trying to keep the animals from escaping into the crowd.
Oh, that's exactly right. You know, and we thought it was just going to be the campaign. It'd be one and done. And if it had been President Clinton, there never would have been a season two. But the circus didn't stop. And so the executive told us to get back out there. You know, I was thinking about what happened today with the Sessions thing. And it just in my mind, it sort of, because it kind of felt like Trump was a TV producer. And he was like, it seems sort of in the picture. He's like, okay, and then an hour after the press conference, I'll fire Sessions. And then the whole thing will blow up. And you can just kind of see how his mind works, you know. And it's like a TV producer. It's like he's trying to create the most drama possible, and he's doing it.
Yeah.
The other point
about that I just make is that you kind of got from this press conference, too, is that he's emboldened. He's emboldened by the election results. And so... I'm not saying this wouldn't have happened under a different outcome of the election, but you can just tell that he's a man in full right now, and that he feels like he used his political muscle, that it worked, and that he's feeling very bulletproof.
Is he unaware that the House has subpoena power?
I don't think he fully comprehends that, but he's about to.
All right, explain that, though, because you've lived through this in your political life. Explain what can happen here. With the House being run by Democrats,
well, they can and they're going to investigate anything and everything, including the new acting attorney general. And I mean, Nancy Pelosi has already called on him to come testify. So, and they have subpoena powers, and they're going to make life miserable for the president in ways that I don't think he has even imagined. Although, the reason he's doing what he's doing is because he had some notion about what was coming on the pike.
Did you see his tweet, though? If they start investigating me, watch out what I might do with the Senate to reveal intelligence documents, things like that. Well, what do you make of that? Is that a real threat?
Sure. I mean, but I don't think it's going to stop anybody or slow anybody down. I mean, but that's classic Trump. I mean, he's going to counterpunch and counterpunch and counterpunch and use everything that he's got to throw everything against the wall to obscure and obfuscate and slow down.
But it's chaos. What we're looking at here is Mayor Daley, as the old man Mayor Daley once said, it's chaos, I tell you, chaos. that's what we're heading into.
Well,
and
you remember that was Jeb Bush's nickname for Trump. He's the chaos president.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's what we are going to see here, because there's no good outcomes. I mean, we just had Anthony Scaramucci on, who I think we all have an abiding sort of admiration and respect for everything.
I want him to co-host the show. I think he's amazing.
He's fantastic, and mm-hmm. he was basically taking credit for telling the president to use that I should have toned it down line when he told that to Sinclair News on Monday night. But the problem is it wasn't really ever going to happen. He can't do it. He's incapable of it. What you saw today is what you really have with Donald Trump. And the question is the United States going to be better off for it? Because there's real stuff. He's got to go down right now. He's got to go. I think he's on his way to Paris, right?
He's going to
November 11th ceremonies there, 100th anniversary of the end of World War One, and then in a couple of weeks he's going to be down in Buenos Aires for the G20, and that's where Putin's going to be. I got a couple restaurant suggestions for him down there. I don't know.
Nice.
I don't know how the theater of this, the circus, Mark McKinnon, can meet what his real demands are going to be in the next couple of weeks.
Well, I don't know. We're going to, unfortunately, going to go off the air after next Sunday, so we're going to have to sit by and watch with all the rest of you. But I will say, and this is not announced yet, because of all that's happened, we're going to have a special one-hour episode Sunday night.
Oh, my God. I'm telling you, thank you for, I know we won't get a chance. This will be the last one, right? So
it will be, but I will say that given all that's happening, now we're talking about moving season four up maybe substantially.
Yeah, because you could have January when they take over. I mean, all kinds of break those.
Exactly. Right. We're already talking about maybe January because that's when everything's going to be happening. The new leadership in the House and presumably the Mueller stuff, and so it's going to be a pretty active time, and we're going to want to be out there.
Yeah.
So I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
We'll be
it's
watching.
It's always great, man. Thank you again.
Kick it hard. Carry
thanks. Thanks, babe. Mark McKinnon.
Did you just call him babe? Thanks, babe.
Buddy, I was trying to say, and I ended, and I in the babe.
Oh.
It happened, babe.
I was like, oh,
thanks, babe.
How well do you know him? Okay.
Not like that. Not like the way the president talks to Judy. Babe.
What happened to honey?
Honey, maybe it's time for you to do the news, toots.
Oh, gosh. Horrible.
Ew. More cases of a rare polio-like disease in Illinois.
Elise Glink joins the Steve Cochran Show tomorrow morning, 7:10. She'll talk about all things money, real estate, and your financial health. All of that.
Elise Glink was my high school classmate.
Same exact name?
No, that was her.
Same
That's
person.
Actually the person.
You went to
That's
school
a human
with her.
Being, yeah.
Oh.
So it's one of those names, it's like Rokan.
I had someone I went to school with I had Elise Glick. So very
yes, but Glink is different than Glick.
That's true. There are fewer
Glinks
than Glicks.
But you actually know this woman.
Yes, that's
okay. So you know her.
Yes,
from school.
Yes,
you had a very prominent class. I mean, everyone went on to be very special people.
Yeah, except
where
me.
Where do you fall on that?
Yeah, list? Not high. Bottom third.
But that's saying something.
Yeah.
With your class.
Yeah, but she's
so Elise was very smart and was like running circles around everybody in math back in the day. And yeah,
yes.
Got A's in math.
A's in English, A's in math. Just almost annoyingly good at school. You know, like when you're not good at it, and then there's kids who are really good at it, and you start to resent them because they're so good at it. It was like that.
Or you work so hard, and it seems like it comes so easy for them.
I wasn't really working that hard.
You weren't?
Nah.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, that's what they said, yeah.
That's what Elise told me.
That's what they say.
Elise, yeah,
I hear you didn't work well. You didn't get good marks, and you didn't work well.
Yeah, Grant DePorter told me a thing or two about how you guys were in high school.
Yeah,
sounds like you had a lot of fun.
He was a year below me. He's my age, though, because he transferred in and they lost his transcript.
Mm. Wish him happy birthday.
True.
It's his birthday today, by the way.
Oh, happy birthday, Grant.
Sit down.
Sit down. Be quiet.
How were your marks, Grant? I bet not very good.
Happy birthday.
Oh, my God. Grant was a genius, too.
Well, he's a genius, but I feel like he's one of those guys that didn't apply himself in school.
Oh, no, he did.
No, he did.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
No, he did.
Really?
He's also one of those Jedi mind trick guys that knows, he's got, he has those,
brilliant.
Tricks to remember things.
Like 106 ways the Cubs won the World Series. With
108, please don't try to go details. You're the exact opposite.
108 calories in a green apple.
Yeah.
He just connects dots in a way that few people can see them.
Right. So, there were a lot of people. John Fritchie, county commissioner.
He's running
Lisa
for mayor.
Madigan.
He's not. I don't think he's running for mayor.
No.
I tried to talk him into it and he wouldn't do it. Brad Bell, the executive producer of The Bold and the Beautiful.
Oh. Very.
A lot of
very
people.
Talented
a lot
people.
A lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And that was just high school.
Right. That was just high school. And I haven't even begun to scratch the surface. I don't want to leave anybody out. But there were some genii in there.
So what would they have known you for, Ro?
Talking in class, being a clown, and really pretty much not being respectful of the whole process of everybody keep your hands to yourself. Coming up, the stories that matter with Judy Pilak from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. That's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN.
If you see California had a referendum you would be interested in, permanent daylight savings time.
There
saving
you go.
Time.
There you go.
62% approved the measure, and it goes to California legislature. So they will take a look at it.
Yeah.
Dude, what does that even mean?
I don't know.
Sounds See, cool though, bro.
Speaking of dude, bro, the marijuana tax. Did you see that got an overwhelming 88% on our ballot?
Yes.
Overwhelming majority of voters, 88% in favor of the sale of marijuana.
Well, taxing it
to help schools and mental health services.
Right.
But I like how they do that. It's like, do you approve the sale of marijuana? You know, to help Chicago with schools, mental health services. I mean,
well,
and poor children who are starving.
I think
it's like, I mean, why can't you just isolate it out and say,
listen, as you we discussed this yesterday. These are patty cake referendums that are up there, so no real referendums can get up there.
That's absolutely true. They're taking their placeholders, taking the place of other ones that
right.
people wanted, like Pat Quinn's being challenged for his one about term limits.
He's, right. That's a real referendum.
It's a real one, but there it's being legally challenged because a lot of people not in favor of the term limits, the people serving the terms in particular.
Right. People don't want, you know, who did that? The more interesting marijuana piece is the one in Michigan.
Right.
You see, the Michigan voted, and this one's binding. This one actually means something, to legalize marijuana for recreational purposes in the state of Michigan.
It's not far away, guys, bros.
Dude, I can smell it from here.
So does that mean that there will be cannabis tourism right on the other side? You got to take the Skyway, which is a trip in and of itself. And then you get off, you spend $5 on the Skyway just to get across a bridge.
Mm-hmm. You think the cops are going to stop you more looking for
which is
contraband.
Really kind of freaky.
And then, they just got rid of the McDonald's, or is it still there?
No, McDonald's
no,
gone.
Not there.
Been gone for a while now.
I know, so you're not going to even have
won't
a place
have that.
To stop for the munch.
Dude, we got to stock up on beef jerky.
It's also a place to go in case you got to go to the bathroom real bad. So that was what that McDonald's was for.
It was very good
I
at that.
I never went there.
Yeah, okay. So, I didn't ask. So, then you get, it's like an hour away from here, right? I mean, you get to the Michigan border.
Sure.
Just imagine what that truck stop across in Michigan is going to be like. It's already a little. It's that truck stop you see there. That it's like really big.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure if that's on the Indiana or the Michigan side.
There, the one you're thinking might be Indiana side. But you're right. You as soon as you get there, it's what an hour 10 minutes.
Yeah.
The first exit you can take there. There are a few opportunities to pull over and.
You know, it's going to be what pot to Michigan is going to be what fireworks are to Indiana. There are going to be these big sheds. You're going to walk in. You're going to that's what it's going to be.
The 10th state now with recreational use. So it's
pick up fireworks on your way home.
Oh, perfect!
Right. Sick weekend,
great combination.
Bro.
You're gonna end up like a JPP blowing your hand off. Yeah.
It was
so do I let go of it or what?
Hey, this is cool.
It's pretty close, 58-42. So
that's not close.
I don't think that's close.
No. That's a big in politics. That's a big win.
I think
huge.
That's 60-40. That's a big one.
Most of our referendum were, it seemed like people overwhelmingly voted in favor.
Yeah, because
of them.
They were worded in a way. Are you in favor of sunshine?
Are you in favor of helping small children?
Right. Would you like Chicago to have more sunny days than it doesn't? Yes or no?
Would you like your taxes to go down?
Yeah. I mean, come on. That one's, you know, it was not controversial. It wasn't close. You know, close would be...
The closest one for us was the plastic straw ban, which only received 55% of the vote saying yes. Banning plastic straws within the city of Chicago.
Oh, that referendum passed?
Yeah, but I don't think that's a binding one. That's not a binding one.
None of them
one.
Are.
No.
But
no.
still,
so
I mean,
it's just
the hell's
advisory.
That? Yeah. Don't. Hey, easy. Easy on the plastic straws.
They end up in our oceans. And
okay, they don't end up in our oceans.
How are you supposed to sip your drink?
Yeah.
With your mouth.
I guess we got to chug it.
We got landfill that eventually become golf courses here for that. This is not what, I'm not worried about that.
Right, because there's no problem with the landfills. We just keep filling up landfills.
It's fine.
Great. Let's keep doing
just
that.
Just keep digging.
That's great.
Just keep digging.
You know how big Earth is?
Yeah, lots, deep. Yeah, go real deep.
Yeah.
Ever go to those quarries?
The deeper you go, the closer it is to the water table, right?
I mean,
all that stuff
table.
Does end up in the environment. It
Who
does.
Needs a water table?
Water
anyway?
Table. That's so overrated.
Just go to Michigan and smoke again.
That's how, as people will recall, how Rob Blagojevich ended up going to the Slam was that there was a landfill out in the south suburbs that his father-in-law was involved in.
Dick Mel.
And then then they got into a fight over Thanksgiving dinner. Literally, those two got into a fight over Thanksgiving dinner. And then on that Monday afterwards, they're both holding press conferences. Why is anybody asking Dick Mel about the about that landfill down there? And then and then Dick Mel goes, why isn't anybody asking him about all these guys he's getting payoffs from? And then whoops. Anyway, so in other words, they're going to have legal marijuana in Michigan.
Yeah.
That will be very interesting. Now, you know, Indiana's probably not going to go there because Mother Pence doesn't want it, right?
That's I can't imagine they're amongst the next states to go. 10 already with recreational.
No, that's getting redder by the minute over there.
Yeah.
So I would think that, but Illinois, you know it's going to happen here.
It seems like it's inevitable. It doesn't seem that way.
JB should think about it.
I think he's talked about it, that and the sports betting, or he's constantly up for discussion.
Right. I mean, it's you got to come up with ways. Come up with ways to actually start paying down this incredibly onerous debt that the state has racked up. Politicians in the state have racked up, and it's mostly Democrats, but Republicans were doing it too. I don't want to sit around and listen to a bunch of these guys screaming about how they, it was always the other side. We were for fiscal responsibility. I know what the Republicans were doing. They were doing it for years. Yeah. Right? Everybody was sucking up to unions to try to get their votes, and they were promising them anything, and that's how we ended up where we are. And now he's going to, if he wants to, he's not going to be able to raise the tax with a graduated income tax. That's the thing about this. It takes a constitutional freaking amendment to do it.
It does.
I said freaking, by the way.
You did. No, I thought you did. But Madigan today spoke out saying that's something that would be up for discussion, that they would
discuss
look at
it
that.
All you want. Not going to happen. Because you have to get 2/3.
You got a super majority now. Didn't the Democrats just get that?
Yeah, but they're not. But that would be the end of their careers. Trust me, that would be the end of their careers. They will get run into, because the people who are going to be affected by this are the people who run the super PACs.
Mm-hmm.
And JB has no leg to stand on here, since his income is run offshore. Right? I mean, how do you do that? How does the guy who's been, he's a billionaire, it's all legal, whatever he's doing, but you can't now tax people in Illinois and say, well, you're going to have to do this when you're not paying your taxes when they're overseas.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were frustrated with the fact that we didn't hear more about what the specifics were as he was running, but he was so far ahead the entire race, it seemed like he didn't need to, and he knew if he would bother the people who would
Rahner
say, wait a minute, they start doing the math.
Rahner couldn't bring it up, because he had the same problem.
Right.
It wasn't like he was going to say, look at this guy and what he's doing, and then we go, what are you doing? This is a billionaire problem. This is why billionaires ain't got game. This is why this is going to be...
Speaking of billionaires, he's the richest elected official in America now, beating the president, according to Forbes. JB.
Billionaires don't normally need game. So I guess
their billionaire-ness is their game.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Billionaires don't need game. But they ain't got it on top of that. Very rarely does a billionaire have game.
He was pretty charismatic, though, in his speech, I think.
It was like he was reading from a wall at the Chicago Historical Society. It was like, and the first Haitian was in, and then we invented the first pop can and zipper
I
liked it.
It was so rehearsed and like theatrics, and you could tell they've been writing it for weeks now.
You know what I liked was she did this to him before, his vice president or whatever you call it, Juliana Stratton, when she got up
Lieutenant
and she goes,
Governor.
I'd like to tell you a few things. And she's like, now, first of all, and all the TV stations, I was working over at Fox last night, and we were like, do we get out of this now? How do we get out of this? And then they wanted to go to Kwame Raoul, because he had just become the attorney general, and Kwame Raoul immediately goes into, well, you know, my parents died, and there was... Aww. And all of a sudden, he gets like into this whole, like, and it was, you go from the frying pan into the fire with Juliana Stratton that nobody really, I mean, you know, let's face it, people are not really voting for the person on the undercard in the governor's race, and she wants to make a 10-minute speech, which she did last time, not interested, and then there's another elected official at the top, of, you know, the Attorney General. And that was a bit of a surprise. Kwame Raoul won
as authoritatively as he did, right?
Yeah.
10 points ahead of Erica Harrell. But Republicans did not do well in the state of Illinois.
But then he brought us down. And then he wanted, and I get it, it's emotional. He's, you know, he wants to honor his family and, the, you know, especially those who passed away and remember that, you know, look, your son did it. But, I mean, but in the meantime, it was like, it was just, everything was like so, like, sad and weird. And then JB gets up and he's got a ton of energy.
Uh-huh.
But it's
positive energy.
But if you go to the Chicago History Museum in North Avenue and Clark Street, there is an actual Pritzker exhibit. And this was before he was running for anything. Mm-hmm. They put this up
there. Isn't there a Pritzker exhibit on every block in this town?
Yes. It's called the Hyatt.
Mandatory.
Yeah. It's a very impressive family story of immigrants who came to Chicago in the 1880s, and then there's a family tree. It's really interesting what they did. However, I think it's like, all right, listen, that's all great. When you're a businessman, you're a philanthropist, I mean, people love you. When you're the governor, everyone's going to start to hate you. Ask Donald Trump, why don't they like me anymore? The press used to love me.
Oprah used to love him, was his line today.
Oprah used to love me.
She used to love me.
Because you're president.
Don't know if she loves me.
Because you're going to do things that are going to make people mad. And then the way you behave is going to make people mad. And JB is going to find himself. He's a likable guy. He's a very nice guy. He's a smart guy. But he's going to find himself in tough situations. This is not easy. They choose to do this. And let's, you know, but...
Well, there are no easy answers.
No!
It's a painful way to bring us back to where we need to be, or else you're lying.
Right. So bring the pot, bring the gambling. What else can we do?
All of it.
Print money. What else can we... Bitcoin? How's that going, Kat?
Why not?
It's okay. I'm more focused on potcoin these days.
Oh, Dennis Rodman put that out there for us. So...
Yeah.
Probably a good idea. Take your investment advice.
Cash
from him.
Cow, basically.
I'd sell off Guaranteed Rate Field back to, you know, private investors because the state owns that.
Mm-hmm.
And are we cash positive on that? I somehow think we're not. Take
the
money.
The Sox are.
Well, the Sox have the sweetheart deal there.
Yeah.
I mean, they got an amazing lease agreement there.
Yes, they do.
Which because they were going to leave. And I get it. I don't blame them for it. And the state did it. Right? Jim Thompson was governor, and he liked the... very much like the White Sox. So it was a good. It was all good. It's
so
fine.
You're about selling off the assets as well.
What do we got? What do we got?
Well, we don't have a Skyway anymore. We don't have the parking meters. So
sell the rights to Lincoln's name.
What
could
about
we do
Soldier
that?
Field?
Soldier Field is owned by the city.
Right.
I'd say sell that too.
How about the river? Can we sell that?
Yes.
Sponsor that?
How about sponsoring the river?
You might want to buy the Thompson Center.
Yeah.
Thompson Center, right. We can buy that or sell that off.
I don't think anyone wants it.
Nobody seems to.
It looks, when you're over it, because our offices at the old place used to look over the Thompson Center, it's a toilet. It looks like a gigantic toilet with a toilet lid down. Like you could lift, there's like a seal of the state on the top of it. Just Google it and you'll
see
what it is. You could literally, it's like you could lift that up and then the Jolly Green Giant could just, you know, poop all over Jesse White's office. Oh, by the way, congratulations to him.
To Jesse, sixth term or something.
Yeah.
74%
100th
term.
How old is he? He died a few years ago.
Not young.
We're not sure.
He's not young.
Has anyone seen Jesse lately?
He's tumbling the problem or the benefit of him is it's a well-run department.
Yeah,
right
he's
now.
Good at it.
Absolutely
yeah,
true.
And it's because of him. So.
Oh, he's 84.
The but first guy ever to be good at that.
He did say he was not going to run, and then he changed his mind midway through, so that's kind of strange, but whatever.
Because he had to run around the bike. He's still in great shape. All right, you know him, you love him, from Veep, Chicago's very own David Pasquazi is waiting in the PPG Paints green room, and he's going to play News or Ruse.
Yes, I saw him when he was at Second City years and years ago and followed his career. He's very talented.
Oh, my God. And that show,
I love it,
is the funniest half hour on television.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. And the problem is they can't write it funny enough anymore for what's going on.
The writing is so good, but it's like,
I know.
Wait, just bring it up a little bit. You don't usually say that when you watch the TV because it's usually crazy enough.
It's now serious compared to the real administration.
I know. You almost wish for it. Right? I wish this was their problem. All right. Judy has got the WGN News at the bottom of the hour. What's coming up?
The Chicago Police Union set to be cutting ties with the attorney in the Van Dyke murder case.
I don't have the thought I had something to say about Tribune, but I do not have anything to say.
You have nothing to say about Tribune.
Well, nothing that we're supposed to legally say here about Tribune, so we'll just...
I enjoy their Bears coverage.
I do, too. David Hawk, great.
I like their font.
I'm a big... I'm a big John Cass fan.
Yeah, me too.
My sister loves him. I was like, you know, I met him once or twice.
Because talking to John Cass, mm-hmm. like when you actually talk to him, I know our producer, Jeff Carlin.
Works with him on the podcast.
Works with him on the podcast, Chicago Way. And when you talk to John Cass, it, honest to God, it's like you're in a meet. Like, you know, we have a sit down.
He's got swag.
He's got...
Swagger?
He's got something. I'm not quite sure what it is.
It's swag.
Don't worry about it.
He does talk in the hushed tones really well.
Mm-hmm. Like, right, like
hey,
there's something. Like,
John, what do you know?
I always feel like someone's going to get hit right afterwards.
Sure.
He's always looking around, too. I'm like, hey.
He does have that look. He's an old school, man. He's an old school, print journalist. So that's what I like about the Tribune. It's nice that we all got to talk about what we liked about the Tribune.
We all shared a story.
All right, News or Ruse is coming your way. You want to play, and we're playing for a really great prize, which is an opportunity to join us next Wednesday at the Blackhawks game. You're going to get Blackhawks tickets and then $100 gift card to Queenie's. And join us for our pre-game show at Queenie's, which is at the United Center, the brand new supper club there that is gorgeous. It's going to be a ton of fun. And that is the grand prize right there. David Pasquese is here from Veep. To play News or Ruse with you, 312-981-7200. That is your phone number.
Thank you, Tibbs.
And now, the Rokan Show presents News or Ruse, a true game of true wit and skill. And now, here's your master of ceremonies, Rokan.
All right, here he is. David Pasquese is joining us as our celebrity. We actually have a celebrity.
We do.
Finally.
Where?
Trust me. You know, I just want to, I hate to say it, but really, you are the biggest celebrity we have had on this show.
I'm terribly sorry.
Yes,
for you.
In months, but you know, you're going to enjoy it. I was just saying that I know you've done a lot of television. Mm-hmm. Chicago guy, Chicago comic. You're going to be opening for Emo Phillips, also a Chicago guy, Chicago
like
comic.
Like him a lot too.
And you know, the guy who actually invented Meet the Parents. People.
Correct.
Him and Greg Liana.
Yes. That Meet the Parents was based on a movie he did that wasn't quite the same.
No.
But it was the same idea.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And,
absolutely.
And
funny
Emo,
concept.
Oh, my God. And Emo is just so funny. So you want to go see Dave, you want to see Emo at Zany's. That is tonight and tomorrow, right?
Tomorrow and Friday.
Tomorrow and Friday.
Downtown and then Saturday night in Rosemont.
Did I say tonight? Oh, my God. Thursday.
Today's
Friday.
Wednesday.
Yeah. That's my fault, because Tuesday was 4 days long for me. So that's how that went. All right. And then, as you said, the Zanies in Rosemount, which is great, by the way. That is a fun, that's a very fun place to see people.
It is.
Out there, and there's a lot going on. If you'd like to follow Mr. Pasquese anywhere, davidpasquese.com or dpasquese on Instagram. All right.
I remember seeing you at Second City.
Oh, my goodness.
Years and years ago. So
you must have
nice
been
to see all your success.
Child.
I was. It was probably one of the first times I had went. But it was, you were awesome then and awesome now.
Well, thanks very much.
Huge fan.
That was a good gang we hung out with then.
Yeah. Really talented crew.
Your work on Veep, the show Veep, first of all, it's all Chicagoans, right?
An awful lot.
Everybody has some Chicago connection.
Except, I think, Tony Hale and Reed Scott, I think. Everyone else.
Yeah, it's amazing mm-hmm. how, and there's a style of comedy because it feels improvised.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of it,
is it?
Some of it might have a little, it seems some of those scenes may not be scripted exactly as the words come out. Am I right about that?
It's pretty well scripted. And then once in a while, they'll let us be a little looser with it. But for the most
part. With the language, perhaps?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the most part, they're word perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Just makes it feel like it,
boy,
right? It's so natural.
Boy, they're so good.
Mm-hmm.
And that show, my God, I wish America were more like Veep. No one, and when they started, when Armando Iannucci, is that
exactly.
the guy's name?
Mm-hmm.
When Armando Iannucci came up with that concept, believe me, that was not his intent. For people to say, God, I wish America was like Veep.
No.
Right?
Yeah.
I think that's
it
one
seemed
of the
wacky at first.
Right. I think that's one of the reasons they decided to stop, is they can't be more absurd.
Right. There's one more season's coming. Though.
Reality.
Right.
Yes. Obviously, Julia Louis-Dreyfus is now recovered from breast cancer, and she's back. I think they're back shooting last couple of weeks for the final season.
Mm-hmm. I love her, too.
I do, too.
Oh, my God. Just the best. All right. So, go see Dave at Zany's tomorrow.
Don't come to see me. Come to see Emo.
Well, see him.
He's
both.
Fantastic.
Tomorrow and Friday, and then Rosemont on Saturday at the Zanies. All right. Let's play News or Ruse, shall we? Let's meet our contestants. This is always the most fun part of the day. Let us see here. Tom is playing with Judy. Tom, you there?
Yes, I am.
All right. Charles is playing with Violetta. Charles.
I'm here.
Hi. All right.
And David is playing with Lee. Lee, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, Lee.
All right.
Hi, David.
Teammate.
Now, you know what you guys are playing for. You guys are playing for a pair of tickets to see the Blackhawks take on the St. Louis Blues on Wednesday. You also receive a $100 gift card from Queenie's Supper Club, and you are invited to be part of our private audience at Queenie's Supper Club next Wednesday. That's the new stadium. It's a restaurant in the stadium. It's not a club restaurant. Anybody can make a reservation at Queenie's if they want to do it.
That's huge.
Yes.
It's going to be fun.
And then, everybody gets a certificate for a desktop pre-lit sports-themed artificial tree from Tree Time Christmas Creations on Pepper Road in Lake Barrington, featuring the most ginormous selection of artificial Christmas trees and unique decorations anywhere. All right.
Cool.
All right, Tom, just watch how the professionals do it and then try to follow along.
Sounds good.
Bless us all. All right, here we go. Tom and Judy, here is your headline. Man reunited with pet snake he accidentally donated to Fort Worth Goodwill.
I think I should be disqualified. It's a Goodwill question.
Conflict.
Right, you are the goodbye girl. I want to say that is a true news story.
Yeah, I agree.
Ooh.
Did Judy know that because
she
that was in the Goodwill
headline?
Newsletter?
Why don't you just move on to the next contestant?
Oh, maybe did you accidentally drop your snake off?
It is Judy.
Was it you that happened to?
It says
him?
Man.
Make me bring my snake out.
Yeah. Judy has an energy. All right, go ahead.
Charles and Violetta, here is your headline. Driver tells police they were making him late for work after a mile-long pursuit.
I will say that is news. That's true.
I'm with you. Well done.
All right.
Nice. It is. Always right. A good excuse.
Lee and David, here is your headline. Applebee's is betting on stress eaters, and it's paying off.
I mean, that has to be real. That has to be real. Somebody's
you want it
gotta,
to be.
Yeah, somebody's got to. There's so much stress, right? Everywhere. Some marketing genius has to cash in on it. Lee?
I'll go with you, David. News.
There you go.
Wow, everyone did well that round.
Absolutely true. They know you're stressed, and they want to make you feel better with cheap alcohol and lots of food.
Way to go.
Yeah.
What a marketing plan.
There you go.
All right, Tom and Judy, here's your headline. Russian lawmakers head to U.S. to monitor midterm elections. Russian lawmakers.
Oh, God.
Get them out of here.
It's oh, so my sweet. God. Remember when we used to send our people to monitor other elections around the world to make sure they're okay?
Right.
Oh, God.
You would think.
It's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
It has to be true, right?
Yes, it's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
No way.
I'm so scared. It's true.
That's terrible. That's the worst thing I've heard.
I know. I know. The Russians are coming here to make sure that we're okay.
Is it really the worst thing you've heard?
Well, in a while.
The Russian lawmakers are taking part in an international monitoring mission to the United States during the midterms. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
They've come to take notes.
Yeah. Right. Well.
Or votes.
Yeah. Oh, hello. Look at that. All right. Charles Violetta, here's your headline. Florida officials tweet to residents, please refrain from using I voted stickers for doing drugs.
Oh, no.
This is Florida, right?
It is. What are you thinking?
I would say that sounds like news for Florida.
All right, I was going to say false, ruse, but it's your game.
I need an answer here.
News.
Should have gone with Violetta. Words rarely spoken.
My guess is that the adhesive plays a factor.
Yeah. You're not supposed to unstick it.
Somehow it works in there. All right, guys, Lee and David, here is your headline. Woman gets 6-foot CVS receipt after buying 3 items. I think that's happened to me.
I don't know if that's a headline, but that's absolutely true.
Sure, absolutely.
Yes.
All right, there you go. Yeah, that's it. That's
so true.
Actually, that story was trending all over.
It was
in the last day or so.
She said something like, "I'm only 4'11" or "I'm 5'2", and look at the receipt; it's taller than me.
There's more newsworthy topics, I think. Than,
yeah, there. Well,
this
it would
isn't
seem
about newsworthiness.
It certainly would seem. It certainly would seem that. But the other piece of that is that it speaks to a bigger issue, which is, you know, they hand you that thing and then you're it's like toilet paper dragging behind you as you're going out of the store. And then what are you supposed to do with it? Because once you've got the roll of it, are you supposed to cut them?
I tear them,
but also I look at, why do they think I want these things?
I know.
What about me or my purchase history makes you think I want these things?
Okay, so I was for years using my daughter's CVS phone number.
Oh.
And then she said, "Dad, that was a bad conversation."
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, I was like, yeah.
The adult aisle, maybe.
Yeah, well,
purchased a thing or two.
And rectal health. There are all kinds of things that were going on there. It was bad. All right. Stand by, everybody. Let's find out from Judy what's going on. Well, actually, Judy doesn't know what's coming at the top of the hour. It's not her newscast anymore. Violetta, what's happening in the roadways? Andrea Darlis is going to join us in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming up at the top of the hour. Let's not forget that.
Nice.
All right. David Pasquese is here. You know him. You love him. A Chicago comedian. He played Selena Myers.
I'd like to. They both of those things are not true. They neither know me nor do they love me.
That's true. Okay, that is correct. Those are both ruses. But
did he get points for that?
Yes, he did. No.
He beats Judy now, right?
We're playing News or Ruse. David is here. He's opening for Emo Phillips this weekend. It's tomorrow, Thursday, and Friday, downtown Zanies. And the Zanies in Rosemont on Saturday. It's a great show. You want to go see it. That's what I want to tell you.
It will be.
And I want to just tell you, I love Veep, and I love everything the two people have ever done on that show. It is just...
It's sure fun to do. It's a great group.
And you played Selena Myers. You played Julia Louis, who drives his first husband. It's one of the great episodes in television history where they have to fake like they like each other for a news crew that's coming in to watch them. Be co-parenting their child.
Right.
And that actress who plays your kid is just fantastic.
Sarah Sutherland. She's wonderful.
Fantastic.
Is she a Chicagoan?
She is not.
Okay.
She's another one.
We still like her.
Yeah, she's great. Kiefer's daughter.
Oh,
she is?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. What a great...
Did you know that?
Donald's granddaughter.
Mm-hmm. I did not know that.
Oh, she's
fantastic.
She's amazing. What a nuanced actress.
She's wonderful.
Because it's all in her face. Mm-hmm. She plays, I can't believe my mother just did that, better than I play, I can't believe my mother just did that.
She stole your bit.
She did. All right, here we go. It's round three. It's the Orion Samuelson round. Tom and Judy, here is your headline.
Ohio man injured after getting shot by his own booby trap.
Oh, would Orion lie?
If it was Florida, I would say.
Yes, I need an answer here. We're in the lightning round.
What do you think, Tom?
I'm gonna say true.
Okay.
Wow.
All right.
Didn't even wait for Judy on that.
I don't have time. Charles Violetta, here is your headline.
Florida judge orders return of lightly used diapers in daycare dispute.
Ew.
I would just say hopefully not true.
I know, but I think it is.
All right, I'll go with you this time, Vila.
You were out of it anyway, actually, because Tom and Judy eliminated you. All right, and Lee and David, here is your headline.
Chuck E. Cheese robot helps man find his way.
I don't think those are programmable on the fly. What do you think?
I'm not sure about programmable, but
just need news or ruse.
Saying that's a ruse. That's a ruse.
That's a ruse, and it's not. That's true.
Oh
my gosh!
Tommy.
think of just what happened right there. Everybody, hold on. Congratulations, Tom. You're going to be joining us for the big show next Wednesday at the United Center as we get ready for the Hawks taking on the Blues at Queenie's, and a $100 gift certificate to Queenie's as well. We're giving away more of those throughout the week as well. And David, thank you very much for being with us. Thanks for playing.
Thanks, damn David. It. What? You lost. I'm sorry.
Damn it!
It was close. Not really.
We forgot to mention that David has an issue with losing.
I know, right?
He's got an emotional thing.
Should have mentioned that
his agent didn't mention that to us. He's like breaking things in the... Wait, no, damn it! It's okay. No, it's all right! It's all right! That's okay!
Ouch! Ooh.